We got breaking news. Another domino falls as the major banks pressure the Democrats to end the shutdown.
Keeping you informed and engaged, now more than ever. This is Seculo. We want to hear from you. Share and post your comments or call 1-800-684-3110. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Welcome to Seculo. Once again, we're talking the government shutdown. That's because the pressure points are on again. Yesterday, we talked about the pressures from the union, and today the pressure is coming from the banks. That's right. You may have logged in even to your bank account. We actually had someone who called in yesterday, said they were having problems with that. You logged in, you see, hey, are you affected by the government shutdown? We're here to help. The government may not help you, but the big banks will. Well, they're saying, hey, we can only do that for so long. So you know what? It's time to end this shutdown. We're happy to help the American people when you won't. However, eventually, that time will run out, Will, and that is what they're saying. And of course, the pressure's on, and now you're starting to have a little bit more closed-door meetings. Things are starting to happen in the Democratic world saying, hey, how do we actually draw this to an end? Because if we lose the unions and then we lose the banks, it's going to get tough and tough.
That's right. So the American Bankers Association, which is kind of the lobby association for the banking industry, they both have big banks and small banks. But they cover about 95% of all banks in the U.S. are members of this association. And they are putting out a statement now today that echoes very much what we saw from the Federal Workers Employee Union yesterday, which calls for a clean continuing resolution and to resolve their policy differences when the government is open and functioning. So now you're starting to see pressure from two powerful groups, both the Federal Employees Union that we talked about yesterday, and now the banking industry. Because when you also start to think about the pressure that can get put on these banks, they are helping individuals at this time. But if it keeps going on and people can't pay their bills, that could start to spark a different kind of financial crisis.
I don't know how the banks actually work and the way money is moved around. It's not necessarily as clean as most people probably think. You know, just your money's not sitting in a vault somewhere ready to go. However, the way they invest, the way they work, of course, they have some, paused where they can help you out, just like they've done during some of the times of economic issues. However, that can wear thin when you start heading into historically long shutdowns.
Yeah, so if you logged in to your bank account, checking account, kind of right when the shutdown began or a couple days later, many banks, your checking account, not your credit card accounts necessarily. Some of those do too.
Yeah.
But your bank actually says if you're going to experience hardship because of payments being delayed or your salary being delayed, contact us. Now, I think why the banks now are moving on it is maybe they can do that for around, a paycheck or two. But if they're starting to cover, 2 months of paychecks, and that means people's, mortgage payments and car payments and much bigger bills than just what they talk about. It's like the essentials, but like the monthly stuff, that then puts strain on the banking system, right? For all these federal employees who were not getting paid. So the banks actually step up in this scenario, do the right thing, but they really are doing it for this offering for what they can do as a temporary time. When it starts extending into payment number two and month number two and mortgage payment two, car payment two, that puts a lot of strain on the banking industry. And guess who that starts affecting then? Not just us, not just the people who aren't getting paid. It starts affecting all of us, right? Because your bank is under pressure as well. So I think with the unions saying, move on, Democrats, you don't have the votes. You're hurting government employees who, by the way, are 99.9% voting for you. So please ensure that they get their payment and fight your battles another day.
And they made a very similar statement to the one yesterday coming from the other union, from the Government Employees Union, saying we urge lawmakers to pass a clean, continuing resolution and resolve their policy differences with the government open and functioning. I mean, it's almost word for word what the employees union said yesterday, the government employees union. So we know the pressure's on. Will the pressure matter? I want to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. 1-800-684-3110. We also know that there is a big push for Christian persecution around the world. We're going to talk about that coming up because, man, it is a tough time in a lot of areas of the world. It's why the ACLJ exists well beyond the borders of America with our European center, with our offices in Jerusalem and other places. Some we can and some we can't even talk about. We'll discuss that coming up. Be right back. Hello. There's a lot of you who are just joining us right now, so I think we need to restate what's going on. We have had another big break, if you will, a fracture with what historically would have been, of course, yesterday we talked about what would have been on Democratic lines, which was, of course, that the American, essentially the government workers union said, you know what? Time to pass a clean continuing resolution. Let's get this done right now. And people are hurting. And like I told you, I'm seeing it now in real places, not Washington, D.C. Not that there's not real people in Washington, D.C., but when you walk into your local drugstore and you can tell that they're starting to feel the pressure and they're starting to get very frustrated. And again, like I said, though it's not necessarily because it's Democrat talking points, when you start saying, hey, quit focusing on the ballroom and start focusing on American people, we know the facts and how that all works. But the visuals are not good. And of course, that is one of the Democrat talking points. I saw that in that article you sent me earlier today where they said, you know, we need to stop worrying about ballrooms and start worrying about getting the American people back to work. Of course, they don't talk about how all of that's being funded and doesn't honestly really matter at this point because now you've had another big break, which is the banks and the credit unions have said it's time. It is time to wrap this up. We have been helping out our customers. We've been doing the right thing while the government's doing the wrong thing. We have been good to our customers, which, good for them for having some good customer service and actually being loyal to their customers. But you know what? That can only go on for so long. We got to get this done because they've been giving people delays. They've been giving people advances. They've been working a lot. Like Jordan said, if you log into your bank account, largely you have seen some sort of, if this affects you, we're here to help.
Just like if there's a storm. It's much like if you're one of the people affected by a hurricane or something like that.
Well, I'm in North Carolina last year.
Yeah. Yes, you'll see it. And again, if for most of the people, they just kind of put it up there too. They're not sure who may have a home there or families there that you might be dealing with. And they're here to help. And so I think what the banks are saying is we are helping, but at a point, our help becomes difficult for our bottom line because, you know, it's one thing to cover a couple weeks of payments, a month of payments. But then if we're going to look into 2 months of payments, then it starts affecting not just the people who need the help from the bank, but everyone who utilizes the bank. And you don't want a banking crisis on top of it.
And what I've seen now with even like a Fox
Business.
Brought
to you by Chuck Schumer.
Yeah, I was listening to Fox Business yesterday, and they were like, hey, but the economy's thriving, but the stock market's through the roof. So is it really hurting anybody? And the answer to that is yes, it is. It's starting to really hurt people. I'm sorry. It may not be hurting you, the Fox Business viewer, as much, but it is hurting real people and you're seeing it.
No, I mean, we know the Fox Business viewer is typically someone who is at a point in life where they are making serious investments.
They are watching Fox Business.
Yeah, and following the market more than just regular news per day. So that's not the government employee who hasn't gotten their paycheck. And I think—
We're living paycheck to paycheck. Likely.
Definitely. And, you know, it's because they do get great benefits. There are great retirement benefits, too, when you put your 20 years in. But these are those things they do have to weather. They've weathered them before and stayed with this position. I think what it says is we can have a discussion about the size of our government. But when our private banks step up and do the right thing, which is a great thing about America, I think, in our companies.
They'll do it.
Capitalism. They'll do it, but they will say, hey, guess what? Like, we can't do this forever.
Well, and Jordan, I think another important point to showcase here is that this isn't just like Wells Fargo or Bank of America making an independent statement. It's the lobby.
Right,
things that we've been calling out is one of the big things is, oh, you know, Congress is still getting paid during all this. But what's interesting is when you have a large union that represents federal workers that is very large. Not only is it a lot of these members of Congress constituents, but the unions end up making financial contributions to members of Congress in different races, as well as this is the lobby for the banks. So it represents the interest of all of those big banks and little banks across the board. If they start getting pushback where then some of these members of Congress who sometimes only are worried about a 2-year cycle or a 6-year cycle of getting reelected, and then they're concerned about getting campaign contributions because they held up this government being open, that starts to speak a little differently. And you even hear it from the number two leader in the Senate. This is Dick Durbin, who is retiring from his Senate career, however, still has a lot of power right now.
And can speak his mind because of that.
And this is what he said to Politico about the union statement yesterday. It said, the Politico writes, the union's plea forced many Democratic lawmakers into a defensive crouch. Their number two Senate leader said it would be subject of internal conversations this week, with bipartisan talks all but ground to a halt. Quote, it has a lot of impact. They've been our friends. and that Democrats take them seriously, talking about the federal workers union that we talked about yesterday. So even these public statements, it is starting to show a different side of the leadership of the Democrat Party in the Senate, even as on this 28th day of shutdown, the Senate is currently voting for, the vote should be over soon, we'll know, it's expected to fail. But today, right now, they are voting for the 13th time to pass the very same clean resolution that the union for the workers and this bank lobby is calling for Congress to pass to end this shutdown. So it hasn't necessarily changed it yet, but you're already starting to hear different talk from the leadership on the Democrat side, which could really start to change.
13th attempt and the vote just failed. So that's what, according, I mean, that is getting to the point of just, it's almost,
did it fail by the exact same number? Like, did any movement changes?
We'll find out.
I just like to see, like,
Of right now, there were three Democrats. It was Senator Cortez Masto, yep. Senator John Fetterman, and Angus King from Maine, who's an independent but caucuses with the Democrats, were the only three that were voting with Republicans to
Paul
move
still
it forward.
Voting,
but a great name.
Was
Rand Angus
Paul
King.
Still voting no, or did
the
he
latest
to
vote
yes?
I saw was unanimous from Republicans, so he's and that's where they only needed five Democrats to move this forward.
So we'll look at that and see if there's anybody. Certainly, with this pressure, I would imagine they could go back to the drawing board and say, you know, I don't know if we can survive this another week. Because interesting with this shutdown is Donald Trump has continued to do his work around the world, you know, peacemaking around the world, going nonstop, and they're in Washington, and it's their fault that people aren't getting paid while he's doing everything he can to figure out how to pay our troops. We've seen that, and you know what they're saying? I don't know if that's legal. They want to challenge that someone donating paychecks
million
for our military.
Dollars to the
anonymously, of course they were named, but anonymously, just to make sure our men and women in service are getting their paycheck, which mostly, if they're serving abroad, goes home to their families.
Jordan, I want to get your take on this strategically for the Democrats. I know you don't want to give them any tips here because of what's going on, but you have some interesting moves here because on November 1st, is what the Democrats were originally trying to hold out for.
Yes, it's
because that's when open enrollment for the Obamacare program comes up. They were hoping that Americans that saw a different price, they would be upset, and then that would give them more pressure on the Republicans to make a deal. You also have those elections coming up. The New York mayoral race, you have the governor of Virginia race, and the governor of New Jersey also coming up in the next week. Do you think that we're already starting to hear some change in tune from people like Dick Durbin? Do you think that the Democrats need to wait until like Wednesday of next week to show they didn't cave before pivotal elections as well as that one benchmark? Or do you think this could be done as soon as this week?
I think it depends on what the polls are showing in those pivotal elections, too. Is this really helping those candidates at all? Or is it hurting those candidates? Or is it a nothing? Is it just or could it actually depress the vote? Where it may be hard to poll, but people won't be as excited about those elections because it looks like, hey, putting more Democrats in to work with this administration right now or this Congress or running my state or city doesn't seem like it's going to be a great decision for me. So is it worth, you know, waiting in line on these off-year elections and getting out the vote? The other risk they're taking is that the insurance market's open and they're not double. You know, they are taking a chance. Right. That and again, this privatized market, and they oversell how many people are in that. Most people do not get their insurance through the Affordable Care Act.
No, right.
Most people are still from their employer.
It's either their employer or through the Medicaid program, which is run and administered by your state.
After your retirement age, through your employer, through a husband, through a wife, some military service, something. This is for that group of people that aren't covered that way and who go into these exchanges. They're putting a lot on that group. I think it was it like 30 million people, somewhere around that?
Yeah. Hey, Jordan, I want to pivot.
In a country of 380 million.
When we have about a minute and a half here, I want to pivot real quick because tomorrow we're going to have a big thing happening in Washington, D.C., and I want you to take a minute to talk about that because next segment we got Rick Winnell joining us.
Yeah, so we are working with CPAC and we're co-sponsoring a summit on religious liberty in the United States and religious persecution worldwide. So we kick off with actually a roundtable at the White House tomorrow with their faith office that some of us from the ACLJ will be obviously attending to kind of talk about, okay, the administration has done great work on its own. How do we codify it? How do we codify the IRS not going after churches for speaking their mind on politics? You know, if you go to your pastor on everything but politics, it's kind of bizarre, right? That you can't even talk about local. Right now you can because of what President Trump's done by executive order. But what happens if there's a change? Well, it's not codified yet. The abortion funding, things like that to Planned Parenthood, codifying. So the next step is President Trump did everything that Republicans had always promised they would do. Now we need to make sure after in the next legislative battles, we get it codified. So if we do that, then we have a reception tomorrow night at the Museum of the Bible, and then an all-day summit with leaders from the House, the Senate, as well as the executive branch.
None of that happens without you, so I encourage you right now as we go to break, go to aclj.org, make a donation if you can. We'll be right back with Rick Grinnell. Welcome back to Seculo. Phone lines are open at 1-800-684, and I want to hear from you. Do we have Rick yet? Are we still waiting? We're still waiting for Rick Grinnell. He'll be joining us in just a second, but I do want to encourage you to call in at 1-800-684-3110 because we'll be taking calls in the next few segments. Rick is joining us now. I'll make sure that we're good to go. Let me know, guys, when we are good. Waiting for the thumbs up. Good to go with Rick Grinnell. Rick, shock of the century, Gavin Newsom says, you know what? I'd be lying if I said, and I can't lie. I cannot tell a lie like George Washington. I would be lying if I said I'm not eyeing a presidential bid. I mean, we are all stunned.
Well, look, it wasn't that long ago where he said that he was not running, right? So he's not running, and now he's not lying that he is running. Look, this guy's a robot. Everybody in California knows that he doesn't work in swing states. He doesn't work in communities that are thoughtful. Let's be honest. I hope he runs because he will implode in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Swing states are not going for this guy. He barely works in far left areas of San Francisco. And even now, his reputation is running thin. He's trying to overturn the census and the bipartisan commission that has created our congressional districts in California. And he's trying to overturn them by claiming that somehow Donald Trump did something nefarious or that Republicans need to have a lesson learned from their work in Texas. I mean, it's all such a blur. But he's got people like Tom Steyer melting down, going on television with their own commercials, screaming about what's happening. I mean, it's a true chaotic situation here in California, but hopefully people are recognizing that we've got to stop his manipulation, vote no on Prop 50, and highlight all of the failures that he has in case he runs for president.
Rick, I'm glad you are able to join us today because I know you were up late watching the Dodgers last night win in an 18-inning game.
Right. We did a full 18. I was there. I felt like I was there. By the end of it, I didn't.
You were hallucinating.
But you mentioned that. I mean, they were obviously running ads in California during the Dodgers game, which was getting a lot of views because of the location of the winning team last night. And just the fact that they're trying to utilize that World Series as a platform to move forward with Prop 50, what you've already mentioned. And you couple that with the work he's doing there and even in his interview where he, you know, alluded to that he will consider it after 2026 whether or not to run. He also is trying to paint this picture of him of this like working class person who, you know, pulled himself up by his bootstraps and that, you know, that they got to where they are because of hustle, you know, just like everyone that starts their own vineyard at 25 years old. I mean, that's a very common thing.
But
I mean, just how is it? It seems like everything he does is trying to paint with revisionist history, whether it be his own history or even why California has that independent districting council, even if it's not perfect. It's definitely not what he's doing now. But no matter what he says, it's always trying to obfuscate what the reality is.
Well, 2 points here. We're talking about baseball, so we should talk about one of the big scandals for Gavin Newsom in that he said that he went to college on a baseball scholarship. He repeated that story for a very long time. He then said that he was recruited to go into the major leagues. None of that is true. He didn't do that. He didn't go to college on a baseball scholarship. He didn't play first base and almost go into the major leagues. He loves to tell these types of stories in a crowd. Of course, he's using his hands the whole time like a robot. But the reality is that the media in California, they don't challenge him. So he gets away with it. Sacramento is completely controlled by the Democrats. All of our cities in California are controlled by Democratic mayors, all of the big cities. And so we really do have a very serious situation where this is all left comfortable world. And he's comfortable telling lies in his lefty world, and no one challenges him. He is going to be just like Kamala. When you leave the comforts of San Francisco and Sacramento, and you go to Washington, D.C., or you go on the campaign trail, you immediately get challenged in your crazy radical thoughts. And you don't know how to defend them because you've never had to defend them. And so you implode on the national stage. And that's exactly what's going to happen to Gavin Newsom. I really do hope that the Democrats put him up because it'll be a nasty fall from grace.
One thing he's done, Rick, which I thought just from the political side, which is interesting, I wanted your kind of comment on too, is in the last really 6 months as he's played this game of reaching out more to conservatives and going on Fox, going on other podcasts, and even on his own podcast, and kind of saying, we can have these conversations, we can laugh, we can joke about it. But I think, don't believe the wolf in sheep's clothing here. I mean, this is, again, you kind of see it in the smile, but he is a hard left operator, like you said, and he thinks strategically, that's just a good look right now. I mean, that's how I interpret it. See, I can sit down and smile with these people. We can have a discussion. At the end of the day, he's not going to listen to any of those people for policy. No. He's going to totally exclude them from any kind of process if he ever got to that that level of power.
Yeah, people should not be fooled by this guy. I think he's reinvented himself through podcasts 4 or 5 times, renaming the podcast, coming up with a new gimmick. If it doesn't work, he just literally comes up with something new. And this is my point. He's not going to be able to get away with that when he goes on the national stage, when he goes to other states. They're going to call him out for it, and the public is going to be educated. Here in California, the LA Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, the Union Tribune in San Diego, they're all lefty papers. All of the TV stations are far left radical. And so he gets away with it because no one is challenging him. Again, it's just like how Kamala Harris went to Washington and climbed her way into the national spotlight and then imploded because as soon as she was tested, as soon as she had a little pushback, she didn't know how to defend any of these ideas. Gavin is going to be the same way. Watch him. He'll lose his cool. He'll mock the other side for being, some sort of radical Nazi group. But he does not know how to defend these issues. He's not that smart. He is just super calculating and always going to reinvent himself and hope for you to not notice.
All right, appreciate you chiming in. Of course, it's a big week as a lot of people are starting to talk about 2028. A little bit early for me to feel like we need to be talking about it, but of course, we're never outside of an election year. It feels like now. It's always election time in America. So we appreciate you chiming in and letting us know how things are out there in California. With that, we're going to head to break. We appreciate it. We have a 1 minute break coming up. And if you get us on SiriusXM, on YouTube, on Rumble, on the Salem News Channel, all those places, we got a full hour coming up for you, so a whole another half hour. Some of your local radio stations only carry the first half hour. Make sure you join us live each and every day, 12 to 1 p.m. And of course, this is later on. That's on Eastern time. If this is later on, you can always find us archived. Ever get your podcast, of course, aclj.org or the ACLJ app. The phone lines are open for you. We're going to reset a bit in the next segment. We are going to talk about some of the work that Jordan's going to be doing in Washington, D.C. And of course, we are going to hear from you at 1-800-684-3110. We are still also continuing our battle against Christian persecution, not just here in America, the real kind of persecution that's happening all around the world, whether that is pastors that have been imprisoned throughout the world, including in China. We have a pastor we've been working with, a new situation. We'll brief you on that coming up. And look, we've fought successfully for persecuted pastors all over the world before, and we're going to do it again. We're going to need your help to get success here. It's always what happens. You got to bring media attention, and you got to bring legal attention. Okay, so sign a petition. We got a brand new petition at aclj.org. You can find out a lot more information. Be right back in less than a minute.
Keeping you informed and engaged now more than ever. This is Seculo. And now your host, Logan Seculo.
Second half hour of Seculo coming up. Of course, we are talking about a lot of different topics, but one of the main ones is that the banks and the credit unions are saying, hey, it is time to end this shutdown. And we got a call coming in. I want to take it right off the top. And a couple lines are open at 1-800-684-3110. Nancy's calling from Texas with a very specific question I know a lot of you had. Nancy, go ahead.
Yes, I would like to know if we the people have the ability to have a say in this. Is there an address or a phone number that we could contact to try to sway some of these Democrats?
Yeah, Nancy, I think one of the things also is just to figure out who we're talking about here.
Right.
Who is actually on that list that could be swayed? A lot of them are, you know, they're going to make the decision based on, are they going to get reelected? Are they going to make their constituents happy? And a lot of times right now, being bipartisan does not do that for a lot of these people. So Will, though, who's on that line?
Well, I think you have to start looking at it, one, where there's a lot of federal workers. So you think about Virginia and Maryland, where you have Tim Kaine, Mark Warner, Chris Van Hollen, and Angela Alsobrooks. And then you also think about Chuck Schumer. He actually angered a lot of people in his party for voting for a CR a year ago, but he's one that has continuously done that. If he feels like the party needs to change direction, Chuck Schumer could change that. You hear Dick Durbin starting to change his mind to some degree and say, you know, we have to take it seriously. And also, he's on his way out. He doesn't have to fear the pushback or retribution of his voters if that's something that he'd be afraid of. So I think you kind of start at it there. I mean, they need five, and I've just listed six, the two from Maryland, the two from Virginia, Chuck Schumer and Dick Durbin. And then that's a place that I feel like the Republicans could start, especially when you look at people that are in leadership that don't want to completely tank their party or their chances in the midterms. You also look at maybe some senators that have races coming up in 2026 that could feel vulnerable if all of a sudden their party is being blamed for this. That's probably the angles that the either the Republicans or people that are trying to convince people would start looking.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you could be strategic about this. You don't have to just call through every Democrat. Think about where are their federal employees, and they're kind of located, of course, across the country. But where are the hubs? Like Will said, you've got Northern Virginia, Maryland, that hub there. Even
some in Delaware, maybe as well.
Delaware. And then if you've got kind of a senator who plays moderate, that's a Democrat, they may be worth willing to call, especially if they're in your state. They really like calls from people who are their actual constituents. Those calls get bumped up on the list. How many did we get from our actual state to the senator? Not how many. And then they will look at the total calls. But how many did we get from Pennsylvania or you know, in your case, Texas? You've got two senators who are voting to keep, you know, the government open with Ted Cruz and John Cornyn. So that's not an issue for you there. So, again, look to who tries to play that moderate game. You don't need to be calling the radical left and put the pressure there.
Does it matter if they're not in their voting group? You know what I mean? So starts calling someone in Delaware, is that going to matter?
You know, you don't really need to get into politics with them. Just say, listen, it's hurting too many people you're hurt. You could say something like, it's hurting family and friends who are federal government employees because they don't know when they're going to get their next paycheck, and I'm trying to help them out, so now it's hurting me.
And
I think that actually works when you're talking to their staff, whether you live in that state or not.
And by the way,
regardless
of
your
politics, they have these phone numbers for a reason, and this is one of those reasons.
Yes.
So yes, they may be annoyed by you, but they also have to have these. They're supposed to be doing it.
They keep track of every call that comes in from the outside on what the issue is about and what the person is asking the senator to do.
Yep. So, I mean, know that it does make an impact. It really can. With that, we're going to head into the next segment, and we got four lines open, so great time to call in. And we're going to discuss a lot of the work of the ACLJ. We got a packed couple days coming at you, and of course, our office in Washington, D.C. is expanding, as well as our media headquarters, and we are around the world right now here at the ACLJ, fighting for religious freedom, Christian persecution around the world. We want you to be a part of that journey as well. So I'm going to encourage you, as we head to the end of October right now, think about supporting the work of the ACLJ. And then, of course, November and December, big months. That's the time we're really going to be talking to you about all the different ways that you can support the ACLJ and get creative with that. Because, look, the media and the legal side is just heating up. We never shut down, not even on Christmas. okay? So go to ACLJ.org right now. Make your donation. We'll be right back with your calls and comments. Hello. Phone lines are completely open, by the way. I think we lost some during the break there. So if you ever want to be on the air, this is a great time to do it. But Jordan, I wanted you to talk about what's going on in Washington, D.C., because as the office has kind of re-evolved and changed, we've had so much growth and change going on in Washington, D.C. And of course, every time there is a new president, every time there is a new group, things have to kind of be adjusted in Washington, D.C., because you're talking to a very different, House, Senate, and of course, presidency and the Supreme Court and all different. It all changes every time an administration shifts.
So we brought in a much more experienced government affairs team that we're building out now through both me and Don Parsons have been working on this, who's a senior counsel with us here at ACLJ, for a year to bring in the right person. He's been on the broadcast now. And he, again, has got over 20 years experience on Capitol Hill and building out his team. ACLJ Action, which is doing a lot of work right now, even through the shutdown, expanding where the ACLJ goes, which also then for you, the supporter of the ACLJ, these bigger kind of corporations and companies and individuals in DC realize the strength and also the skills that we provide at the ACLJ, the knowledge that we have to be able to walk through these complicated legal issues and policy issues as well. But I mean, just this week, we are partnering officially with CPAC, people know CPAC, on what is a very targeted event on ending Christian persecution and religious liberty in the United States. So kind of looking at the U.S. and then looking around the world. And we start off at the White House tomorrow and their faith office. And it's kind of saying, what do we do with all of the good that President Trump and the executive branch are doing? What do we do next? And I think the focus is, of course, is victories in the midterm elections, which can be very difficult, so that we can then begin to target and codify so many of these executive orders, which have been things promised but never delivered by previous Republican presidents. I can thank Speaker Johnson for that too, getting the defunding of Planned Parenthood, things like that. Also, the protections for churches to be able to speak their minds on all issues, the IRS executive order. We have to work now at conscience protections on codifying that into law. It's hard to think about that during a shutdown when they can't even get the budget through, but groups like us can start thinking about that now and working through. So we start off that tomorrow morning, I think, right in the afternoon. Then we're hosting the reception for the event at the Museum of the Bible with members of Congress, with experts in kind of religious liberty, everyone coming together. I'm speaking at that along with Matt and Mercedes Schlapp, who people know from CPAC and American Conservative Union. And then switching there to the next day, we're hosting a summit. And I'm proud to say, with four of our ACLJ folks will be in it out of, I think about 6-7 panels. So I'm helping kick it off and helping kind of end it as a speaker, but I'm also moderating a panel that I think Ben Sisney is on, and then CC Howell's on a panel. Christy will be on a panel as well. And some are looking at international, some are looking at US. And so it's that line we've always talked about, Logan, which has gotten a little blurrier, something I'm gonna be talking about there. We usually say that Christian persecution happens in other places around the world, and that here we face at most discrimination. But with what happened with the parents, going to the school boards and then FBI showing up at your door because of Latin mass and all of those issues, it's
creeping at least.
The line is getting a little blurrier between discrimination, which is bad enough in a country that defines freedom of religion in its First Amendment, to, I wouldn't say persecution yet, but also then what can our government be doing better to make sure that Christians who should be protected in other countries, that their governments are using the resources many times provided by the U.S. I kind of look at it like NATO. Like if we're going to provide you resources and treat you as an ally, and you've got a Christian community that makes up 40 or 50% of your population, but you're not willing to use your military, which we help train and fund to protect them from the radicals, then you are failing as a leader and putting your funding from the U.S. in jeopardy. So that's how I look, from the international side. And we're able to then spend, 6 hours throughout a day getting into these issues and then coming forward in a unified way, because we know we've got a White House, an administration, a Department of Justice, a Senate and House with leaders. I mean, I think about it, that we've been fighting with before they were even there. You think about Mike Johnson, you think about Ted Cruz, you think about, again, even President Trump, who has been willing to go there on the issues they'd always talk about, Republican candidates. Lord knows I worked for many of them. And then if they got there, it became the last thing on their agenda, and usually it was the first thing cut in a negotiation.
Well,
Jordan, the first thing they cut is the funding. Okay, we can't get you on defunding Planned Parenthood. We tried. We had to cut that out.
What's an interesting thing to me here as well is that for those of you that have watched the ACLJ for a long time or followed the work of the organization, persecution around the world has been something we have had a unique opportunity to fight, whether it be our status at the UN, our offices around the world. When it comes to an event like CPAC, which is very high profile, people know CPAC in America. It has been a kingmaker for a very long time within Republican politics and conservative politics. But
how dare you?
The fact that one, under the leadership of Matt and Mercedes Schlapp, that something like a persecution event, that was not really the tone nor the focus, emphasis of a CPAC years gone by. But people, now when you start to see something like this.
What CPAC has done, it's been expanding the focus areas of the events. I mean, they have an event next week in Florida. I think it's at Mar-a-Lago. And that one is going to be focusing much more on U.S., you know, policy. So you've got these different areas that they can then organize. Even our European team gets involved in their events. So Greg Orr has participated in CPAC events overseas since Matt and Mercedes really started leading the organization.
Our European Center.
And I wanted to note, this dates back all the way to our trip in the summer when we were at the U.S. consulate. When Ambassador Kushner visits Strasbourg in the consulate on Monday, Greg Orr will be there. To present how this consulate could be doing more, working with the embassy in Paris and Ambassador Kushner. By the way, for that to happen that's never happened before. ECLJ, because typically that consulate under Republican Democrats has been run by careerists in the State Department who don't love conservatives. Yeah. So they just kind of ignore that you're there.
And in Europe also, when you start talking about that, the conservative is very different than the conservative in America also. And I think people have always needed to kind of know that.
Of course, it's different. But this is about as Americans talking to Americans. And then Greg Orr saying, as America, this is what you could be doing through this consulate. Don't look at this consulate as a passports and a baby was born or a death certificate. Look at this as a place that has you have a seat at the table at the Council of Europe. And you can be utilizing it. You can be Russia's out. So you are the superpower that's there, even though you don't have a vote. If they know your position and they rely on the U.S., and right now they're not getting enough attention from that, and so he's going to be with Ambassador Kushner. That was that came from being there in May and June. So you see how, again, this work is all starting to tie together in a world that is not so... that is fairly interconnected these days.
It's a small world.
Well, and when you also think about the fact that the ACLJ started that office decades ago, that this has not been
25 plus years ago.
It's not been a short-term journey for the ACLJ. That is one of the reasons why, when there is a panel with CPAC, that it is in partnership with the ACLJ, because we understand this persecution issue, some of the best in the country, and have fought for this to end persecution for so long.
I think that's the key, too.
As well as the ECLJ.
Successful strategies. You know, what is success when you're talking about persecution? How do you, it can be so overwhelming. So how do you focus in on it? What does the U.S. do as a government? What do private nonprofit organizations, how do they assist? And one of the issues we're looking at is it's on immigration. It's with the asylums. There's so many people in the asylum line who should not be. We need a process that identifies those people much quicker so that those who are fleeing because of religious persecution, those are people we want to grant asylum if appropriate in our country, if they meet the standards. And right now, those people are like way behind in line because so many people started saying, well, if you lived near cartel violence, you could be seeking asylum. And somehow, and in those cases, Logan, are backlogged 3 to 5 years. So right there, we've got a lot of persecuted people who have who could successfully flee but don't have a place to call home. And America, that is what our country is supposed to be, is that place for the persecuted to be able to come to, and they should be at the front of the line. It's why the asylum process is completely different from the immigration process.
All right, and with that, we only got, that's what the work of the ACLJ is doing all year long. It is constant. It's consistent. Like I said, we never shut down. It is 365 days a year, and it is not just our work here doing it. You may be brand new. I know thousands of people joined us yesterday who have never seen us before. Try a thousand of you join us right now who have never seen us before. I want to encourage you, if you've never seen us before, subscribe to this channel, because you're going to learn very quickly the ACLJ and the work we do here at Seculo goes well beyond the walls of this studio. Of course, we are around the world with our legal work and our advocacy work. All of that happens because people like you decide to support the work of the ACLJ. If you have a local station, you're hearing advertisers while on break, that money doesn't go to us. I started saying that because I want to make sure people know that. It goes to your network or to your local station. If you are watching on YouTube, it's a minor amount of money that comes in through YouTube ad revenue. All of this happens because people like you give it, whether it's a $25 level, a $50 level, whatever it may be, one time, or as an ACLJ champion that gives monthly at ACLJ.org. We also got that new petition up right now for Christian persecution. Go to ACLJ.org/sign. Last segment of the day. We do have some phone lines open. So if you want to be on the air at 1-800-684-3110. Of course, a lot of you talking about the government shutdown, and there's a lot of other news happening as well. We'll continue to cover that throughout the week, as well as tell you about the amazing work here at the ACLJ. Is the government shutdown affecting you? I want you to call in. Let me know. 1-800-684-3110. Also, seems like the news of the day can't get enough, of course, of the big New York mayoral election, which is just about a week away, right? Well, a week and a half, 2 weeks.
That's right. Yeah, next Tuesday.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll see how things shake out. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of concern coming in from people whether Mondani will pull this off. It surely looks like it. He drew thousands of people, not as big as they thought, actually, were going to show up. And there are some internal polls showing Cuomo coming up. There are also some polls coming up that said, hey, the young people aren't getting out quite as much as they thought they were compared to the primary. That there was a lot of feedback at the primary, and now they're getting concerned that they think it's going to be an easy win. And in New York, that could get swayed very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, so many people. So really, like, which area shows up more can sway the entire for a mayor's race. And also, I think some of those young people, what I'm hoping is that they have been kind of listening to a lot of their employers who have said, listen, if this guy gets elected, we're out. And that means that the city that you love living in, and maybe you've got this great job in, you may be having to relocate too. So you might be rethinking if you work in the industries that he's kind of demonized. About it's one thing to vote in a primary. It's different to vote for the actual person to actually run the city. And you might be rethinking that. And again, that I'm trying to put my mind into the mind of a voter who even voted for him in a primary. It's tough for me to do. But I think that there's still time for a surprise there. I think if the election were today, it's probably him because it's a three-way race. And it doesn't look like Sliwa is going to step aside.
Anything gets tightened.
Well, here's the deal.
A
new poll came out that previously had Cuomo down 20 points to Mamdani. Now, Mamdani is up 44-34 over Cuomo, so 10 points with Curtis Sliwa holding 11% of the vote. Now, you don't know if it's one for one, if people just are like, if he's out, I'm just not going to vote, but it is a very close race, and it would be even closer if it were a head-to-head race instead of it being a three-way race.
Sadly, Sliwa seems like he's not going anywhere. It seems like he has dug his heels in sand, is not going to be doing it. Now, it's whether people listen to it and say it's time to get behind Cuomo or not. Of course, it's shocking to say that, but Cuomo is running independent. I heard him last night. He goes, they said, are you still a Democrat? And he said, yeah, I'm a Democrat on the independent line because they're not Democrats.
Right.
He's been a socialist on the Democratic line who got to be the nominee, but I'm the real Democrat here. Of course, that is not exactly who you want as part of a lot of our listeners, but if you compare the difference, would you rather have a traditional Democrat or a socialist? I think that line is pretty clear. Now, that 10-point swing, you had Mondami yesterday. He was on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart saying, hey, endorsements don't win elections anymore because you had Eric Adams come out and support Cuomo. Well, it clearly affected the polls.
Right. Well, and I also think it's interesting because we've been talking about the shutdown in that race, and the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, today in his presser giving the update on this 28th day of the shutdown, actually tied the two things together. about the fear of the base that the leadership in Washington have. And they're seeing that in the rise of candidates like the mayoral candidate in New York. So let's go ahead and listen to bite four, because I think it ties these two issues together about what the Speaker of the House sees as the fear of the Democrats in Washington of their more left base. Bite four.
This is motivated purely out of fear. And what do we mean by that? You saw the Democratic leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries, endorse Zohran Mamdani for mayor of New York City on Friday. It was an illustration of what we're facing here. The Democrats right now fear the far left activists more than they fear air traffic controllers, border patrol agents, American service members, and so many others missing their paychecks. They fear the Marxist insurgents like Mamdani more than they fear families and children going hungry from lapsed benefits that keep food on their tables. They simply fear losing their own political positions next November if they don't appease the angry far left base right now.
And I think he's spot on with that. And even the fact he brings up that the issues with the food benefits, the food assistance that people need and rely on, that it's 40 million people, that the Democrats in that party are saying that they're holding out for these Obamacare subsidies they want to negotiate. When there are people that are relying on government assistance, let's take out the paychecks of workers, people that need this to eat, to survive. They are more concerned about the subsidies that they have this hypothetical about people's rates going up and how badly it's going to impact Americans. When right now people are going to be going hungry because of what the Democrats are doing, being beholden to their base and their like these wonderful policies they think that they can get out of this.
You know what? Now, there's some comments coming in, Coop. People who are just joining us right now, 3 minutes before the show's over, and they're going, oh, this is clickbait. Y'all aren't even talking about the main story you said you wanted to. Because obviously our headline was specifically about the bank unions saying it's time to end the shutdown. Maybe over the next year. We spent about half an hour talking about that, 45 minutes. You can go back. But Will, why don't you give us a one-minute version of that? And while we give that one-minute version, I'm going to ask you, everyone in the comments, to tell me.
Spent an hour and a half the last 2 days.
Tell me where you're watching from in the comments while Will gives this one-minute explanation to those clickbait haters in the comments.
So what we see now is on the heels of the largest union representing federal workers yesterday said that Democrats need to jump on board with the clean continuing resolution and get the government back open. Now, the largest lobby for banks, so an organization representing 95% of the banks in this country, are calling for the exact same. It's time for this game to end. Get people back to work, get them paid, and reopen the government and negotiate your policy differences later. So two big interest group putting pressure on the Democrats to vote for what they have voted against now 13 times.
Here's why, just to kind of break this down for people. So on Tuesday, so today, air traffic controllers are missing their first payday. Friday, the military is set to miss its first full payday. I know they're trying to figure that out, so maybe that won't actually happen. Then Saturday is when the food subsidy programs would lose funding as well. So the federal nutrition benefits, SNAP programs, things like that. So that program alone is big for the left. And the reason why the people aren't getting their SNAP benefits to be able to buy food for their family is because of the people they usually vote for, the Democrats.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Donald Trump is not taking the heat on this at all, or Republicans.
Yeah, look, I'm looking at all the comments.
But it's going to start, this starts now.
The people that watch our show represent the entire country, if not the world. Yesterday we had callers from Australia. We had people call in from, we had a comment from Antarctica, and the guy was walking, he's like, base in Antarctica. Allegedly. I think he was telling the truth. He said he's the only thing.
He said he's the only thing in the D.C. area. A lot of federal employees.
But we're seeing these comments come in. That's why I always like to ask where you're watching from, because I know, because of how broad our show is, a lot of shows do this nationwide footprint, worldwide footprint. We're able to get advice, opinions, thoughts coming in from literally every tip of the world. I'm seeing it come in. It's crazy. Every bit of the country in parts of the entire world are chiming in right now. And because of you, we're able to have this broadcast. And because of you, we're able to impact the world, impact the laws, impact politics, everything. Because people like you support the work of the ACLJ. We got a new petition right now about a pastor who is imprisoned, a persecuted pastor in China. I want you to be a part of it right now. He's arrested for his faith, going on day 18 of being detained. and a prison. Be a part of helping get him free, as well as all the other incredible work of the ACLJ at aclj.org today. Again, that's aclj.org/sign if you want to sign that petition. Talk to you tomorrow.